On Air with George Adair on News Talk 1350 and the new FM 103.5 KSRO.
Hey, happy Wednesday, everybody. I'm George Adair, doing the show every Wednesday at noon. Thanks for joining us live today. We have a great guest. We'll invite him in just a moment. David Guin, he's the assistant city manager for the city of Santa Rosa. Great guest. We always enjoy learning about the updates he has to present to our audience. Hey, Michelle, how are you?
I am good.
You're tired?
I'm a little bit tired.
You look sleepy.
Just finished a move, yep. So that takes a lot out of you.
Yes, it does.
Love my new place. I'm
good.
Very excited about it.
Awesome. Well, hopefully it'll be your home for a long time to come.
Yes, please. No more moving.
Moving's not fun.
No.
But it's really something we're going to talk about is the housing and availability of housing and what's coming down the pipe here. We'll talk with David Guin about that in just a moment. But, you know, the hot topic of lending world today is about interest rates. I just got a text from a friend and client of mine who we locked in last week at a low rate. And he was informed today by some source, I'm not sure whom, that interest rates fell this week.
Mm-hmm.
Or today, he said. Interest rates fell today. Well, no, they didn't. And typically what happens is the press is a week behind. So as you're looking at what's happening with the interest rate world, you have to realize that the press with interest rates is always way off. They're just not going to give you the real-time data. I will, to my clients, of course. You can also go to bank websites and they'll have real-time interest rates there. But anything like bankrate.com or anything that's posted by articles that are just really restating that type of data is always at least 1 to 2 weeks behind.
Mm-hmm.
So rates went down last week. And then they went up at the end of last week.
Okay.
And then now they settled down a little bit from off the highs of last week. So realize that rate volatility is something that we track in my business. Of course, I'm with Cross Country Mortgage. And we track it on a regular basis. But also realize that volatility, movements in rate, interest rates, is typically like an eighth to a quarter of a percent. We're not talking about huge, big swings.
Right.
On your $400,000 mortgage or $500,000 mortgage, that eighth of a percentage point is like $25 a month. Maybe $40 a month, depending on what amount we're talking about. So don't let that, don't tie yourself to rate volatility.
Mm-hmm.
You know, tie yourself to your goals. Are you refinancing for cash out to reduce the interest rate that you have on consumer debt, where credit, you know, interest rates have gone up tremendously because of the prime rate over the last couple of years? Are you looking to consolidate student loans? Is another very popular use of money. But if you're using the money to also improve your property, does it really matter if your interest rate is 3.875 or 4? It doesn't really matter, folks. What matters is you're putting the money into your property, which is going to give you higher valuation over the long run, deal with depreciated asset that you own there, and also give you maybe something more comfortable to live in.
Right. And also, the rate is going to be different for everyone. So, I mean, you're not going to necessarily get the same rate as your neighbor.
You're not. I've told people there's like 30 different things that affect an interest rate. And the big ones are what the percentage of the loan is against the value,
mm-hmm.
but also whether or not you live in the property or not. And the biggest one is FICO score. So if the FICO score is anywhere from 620 to 660, it's going to be a much higher rate than if you have anything from a 720 up.
Mm-hmm.
Realize that's part of the process we're going to go through. You can always find out more information by visiting our website, georgiadair.com, georgiadair.com. You can also go to 707-583-8100. Call 707-583-8100. I said go to. I meant go to on your phone.
Yeah. Pick up your phone and go there and then dial that.
All right. That's enough about rates. Folks, I want to invite our guest, David Guin, Assistant City Manager for the City of Santa Rosa. David, thank you for joining us again.
Thanks for having me again.
Oh, I love having you on board the show because we really get updates on what's happening in the economic development world of Santa Rosa, the building development world of Santa Rosa. And, of course, we like to get updates as what's happened with the fire-stricken areas and the rebuild efforts. I like that website you guys have. What mm-hmm. the rebuild tracker? How do people find that website again?
Yeah, the best way to go is srcity.org/rebuild. And from there, there's links to all sorts of tracking data, maps. You can get as detailed as you want, down to the parcel level in terms of what contractor's working where and what type of products being put on that site and the timing of that, where the permit is in the process. So it's a real tool primarily for homeowners. We built that initially for homeowners. So if the homeowners have an issue with a contract or a project or they feel like there's a delay or wondering what's happening, they can actually go online, click on their parcel, pull up a detailed parcel report, and get detail on their permit, where it is, whose hands it's in, what the comments were, and what the issues are.
Yeah.
So that way, there's some fact checking and some transparency in this process, because we've heard a lot of mixed information out there in terms of contractors saying one thing and the city saying one thing. So we just put it all out there.
That's surprising.
We figured, hey, we want to be open and transparent about this process and identify, you know, who's accountable and hold them accountable. If a contractor's needs to be held accountable, we're going to do that. We're looking out for the homeowner. We want to make sure that they get back into their home and their things are moving through the process. If we're holding something up, we want to be held accountable. We want to make sure that we adjust to make sure that we get that fixed. And then there's higher level reports, which I think is really good for the community at large, is higher level reports about where we are. And I think you maybe have that up on your computer there, that how many are occupied, how many are under construction, how many permits are going through the planning process. And that gives a sense of where we are as a community in terms of moving through this recovery process.
Yeah, and just to give folks some of those stats, because I've got it open, structures complete is at 506, and in construction is 1155. So, you know, theoretically, in the foreseeable close future, we'll be at 1700 completed units, homes.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing.
That is amazing.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting process to watch the evolution of this, I think, from the standpoint of the initial aftermath of the fire and to what do you do? What's that first step you take to how do you get your lot cleared? Okay, we're past that hurdle. Okay, now how do I find a contractor and get plans built? And now we're into those interesting nuances. And, it's actually amazing that we're in this position of having to manage impacts of construction as people move in. So now you have occupied homes in the middle of a massive, construction zone that typically never happens.
So like you mentioned to me in pre-show preparation, the noise ordinances you know, how early, I bet this is a big one, how early are people starting their construction work?
Yeah, we actually just brought an ordinance update to council a couple weeks ago, and it made the paper that construction activities are 7 to 7. So that's when people can work. We modified that to allow, with our approval, work to start as early as 5 for certain activities and go as late as 9 for certain activities. And the reason for that was people's insurance are coming up on a deadline.
Got to get it done.
Yeah, so we want to make sure that things such as concrete pours, or where we have a limited choke point, or we have a choke point in the process, that we have a way to work with contractors and be flexible in the homeowners. But it's not an open call for everyone to start at work at 5. I want to make that very clear. If somebody wants to start working at 5, they have to come in and get approval.
Okay.
They have to plan ahead. There's a noticing requirement. They have to reach out and post to tell the neighbors that this is going to happen. And typically what we found over the time working with Coffee Strong and neighborhood groups in Fountain Grove is as long as they know and they've given notice, that's okay. They can work with that.
Yeah.
But being surprised and woken up at 5 a.m. when you're not expecting it, when you have work to get to and other things.
Sure.
That's tough. So we want to have flexibility, but also hold them responsible.
Can we have a local ordinance that removes those beeping noises from those big heavy equipment backing up?
Those are the ones.
I think we hear the diesel engine. We know it's coming. We don't need the beeps.
Yeah. Definitely OSHA criteria.
Yeah, right. I'm sure that is. It's at a federal level. But the rebuild effort is always interesting to people. It's something that we always like to talk about. What are some other things that you'd like to point out to the community that maybe they don't know that is happening in rebuild?
Rebuild. I think one of the things that's happening is the infrastructure side of this. So what we tend to focus on are the homes.
Yes.
We're replacing a single family home, a multifamily home. But there's
you got to get the roads. You got to get the offsite improvements. Yeah. You got to get the utilities.
Yeah, all this infrastructure that was damaged that most people aren't typically aware of until they're impacted by it. So such as a streetlight, that's been a big issue lately. Mm-hmm. Streetlights aren't on, and that causes zone issues. And part of that's the wires were burned up, and the poles were burned, and the lights were burnt out. So part of that is how do we replace that with funds? And then there's burnt trees as well in the public right of way and things that have to be replaced. Mm-hmm. That falls on the city to do, and the city. Has a reserve, but at some point that's a lot of money that has to be spent of public funds to try to fix this infrastructure. And so what we're trying to do is work with the state and federal government to recoup some of that funding, emergency funding, back to the city so we can help fund these projects and not put the city in a more precarious financial situation.
And you say back to the city, but also there's foreseeable expenses in the future that was not put in the budget necessarily, although it will start in the future, I guess. But are you getting that support from the state and federal level?
It's a challenge. I think any disaster there are issues with getting funding from the federal government, from FEMA. I think we're still seeing it. Even Katrina, I think they're still working through getting money through FEMA. There's been natural disaster after natural disaster.
And there always will be.
And there always will be. They stack up. And so I think you start to see this, the hurricanes and the fires and the everything that's happening, the earthquakes and things that are happening. Getting funds from FEMA is an ongoing and laborious and it's going to be a long-term process, but we are making progress.
So
I'm sorry, one more quick thing. Actually, on that website, src.org/rebuild, there is a place you can click on for public infrastructure. So you can actually see what the deficit is in terms of what we're looking for funding for, what we've been able to achieve in terms of bringing money from FEMA, and what's still left to do. So we're tracking that as well on the very similar dashboard as the rebuild, because we want to, again, show the public and be transparent about what's going on both sides of the coin here in terms of the private development and the public infrastructure.
I'd say congratulations, kudos to the city for putting together a really great website. I mean, this website is dynamic, very easy to get through, nice summary of relevant, good information. So kudos to you guys for that. And seeing the value of putting centralized, consistent information up. Mm-hmm. I think there's always a lot of misinformation. You get the rumor mills. And then, of course, you have the major Facebook pages. We all know which ones they are that have good intention. But, you get a couple folks that are very vocal on those pages. And they start spreading, a lot of false information. So, again, srcity.org/rebuild. srcity.org/rebuild. We're going to go to commercial break in just a minute. We are joined with David Guen, the assistant city manager for the city of Santa Rosa. And when we come back, we're going to talk about actual building projects that are happening around the city. Really exciting. People have been crying for more housing. There's a lot on the table. There's a lot happening. A lot of it's under David and the city's leadership, of course, and their eagerness to fast track it. So folks, I'm George Adair. We'll be right back with David Guen in just a few minutes.
On Air with George Adair on News Talk 1350 and the new FM 103.5 KSRO.
This is George Adair with Cross Country Mortgage. If you're in the market to buy a home, this message is for you. My team and I are experts at providing hands-on assistance to getting your home financing done fast and with confidence. In fact, we're closing purchase loans in as fast as 10 days on many of the programs we offer. The best part is our pre-approved buyers don't need a loan contingency in making their offer. That makes buyers look as good as cash. If you're applying for a home loan at your bank, ask them if they can close in 10 days with no loan contingency. I promise they can't. When you're buying a home, speed to close and a true loan approval are necessary to win the offer. How do we do it? Cross Country is a direct lender with amazing technology, experience, and a local presence. Our process is proven to help buyers win in this competitive housing market. If you're ready for a great lending experience, call 707-583-8100. That's 707-583-8100. Or visit georgiadare.com. That's georgiadare.com.
Cross Country Mortgage, NMLS ID 2039, and Georgia Dare, NMLS ID 245370. Equal housing lender, subject to credit approval.
Yes, we know it can be an emotional time if your home is infested with termites, bed bugs, spiders, ants, what have you. It happens in the cleanest of homes. So be calm, take a big, soothing, cleansing breath, and say,
Clark, we need you!
That'll work.
Clark Pest Control. Call for your free inspection. Clark will rid your home and yard of pests and keep them away. So be calm. Talk to us at 1-800-WE-NEED-YOU or clarkpest.com. Say, Clark, we need you.
We went on the street to find out what you love about MySonomaDeals.com.
I always take advantage of the hotel deals.
Oh, the restaurants for sure.
Believe it or not, you can save 50% and more at MySonomaDeals.com.
I take advantage of the golf deal.
Visit MySonomaDeals.com often for the best deals in Sonoma County. They're always changing and in limited quantities.
We love the family options.
You'll find savings and fun all wrapped into one at MySonomaDeals.com.
I had no idea.
On Air with George Adair on News Talk 1350 and the new FM 103.5 KSRO.
Hey, we're back with David Guen. He's the assistant city manager for the city of Santa Rosa. Thanks again, David, for joining us.
Thank you for having me again.
Oh, absolutely. It's great having you on because you give us a lot of good data real fast. but it's relevant to people's lives. And of course, in the most populous city of the county. So City of Santa Rosa has lots of growth strategy and plans in place. Rosalind, you and I were just talking about that. That annexation mm-hmm. occurred just after the fires. Mm-hmm. And that was something that people were watching for a long time. What's sort of the latest progress report on that? It's just kind of part of the overall building efforts of City of Santa Rosa?
Yeah, it's an important addition to our city. It's a fairly big size, mm-hmm. Big population add to the city. We tend to relate it to the size of Cotati being added to mm-hmm. Santa Rosa. And it's an important part of our community. I think there's things that were done through the annexation process that we worked with the community to try to mm-hmm. maintain certain elements of the community that wanted to continue on. So I think there's a big desire to have food trucks down on Sebastopol Road area. Mm-hmm. And so we created a policy that continues to allow those to be there and facilitate additional units.
There's also the brick and mortar businesses that don't appreciate that.
Well, you know, I think there's an interesting relationship down, mm-hmm. Especially on Sebastopol Road, where a lot of brick and mortar restaurants do have a mobile truck as well.
Sure, so they've added it as an additional service.
Yeah, it's really interesting. Yeah. And it's been... You know, it's a great model, and I think it's something that we're looking at citywide, too, eventually, to how we can help incorporate those.
Yeah, citywide, you're going to get some real good flack on 4th Street.
Yeah,
that
yeah.
One.
We tried that before, but
it didn't work very well.
It didn't work very well, but I think, you know, there's, you know, we could always talk about these things.
You always got the guy selling hot dogs down in the square, but I don't know if we're going to get much more support
beyond
that. We'll see. Good old Ralph. We'll see how that goes. But let's talk more about downtown just a bit. Of course, last time you were here, there were some committee meetings coming up mm-hmm. with the city, and that was back in January. What's the latest with downtown development?
Yeah, so downtown, one of the big things that's happening is, two fronts. One is there are developments that are moving through right now that are on the scale of 5 to 6 to 7 stories mm-hmm. That we're working
going
through.
Up's a big deal here.
It's important. It's important that we utilize our limited land in the downtown core near
sure.
transit, near jobs in the most efficient way possible. If you look at any city our size around the country, there's a yeah. skyline, right? We're pretty unique in a city of this size and magnitude that doesn't have a skyline.
It's because we have a big board. We have big perimeter that we've expanded into. Roseland's an example of that.
We do. And I think that's kind of the natural tendency is to first expand
sure.
and then go up. And
yeah,
I think,
get more suburban.
Yeah. Right.
Right. But now we got to go up, increasing the density, don't we?
Yeah, we do. And for a lot of reasons, for environmental reasons, for greenhouse gas reductions, for mm-hmm. Equity issues in terms
sure.
of traveling and access to cars and access to transit. So there's a lot of reasons for it. And the city's been making a big push for that. And one of the big decision points is actually coming up next week. We're bringing a study session to our city council next week. It starts mm-hmm. at 10 a.m. on Tuesday.
Okay.
And it's going to be a joint meeting, which is the planning commission and the city council sitting side by side. And staff is going to present, here are some alternatives that we've heard from the public over the past 3 or 4 months as we've been talking about. Mm-hmm. What do we envision downtown to look like? What mm-hmm. do we want to see? What kind of densities? What kind of heights? What kind of amenities? How do we want to connect things?
This sounds like general plan conversation.
It is, yeah. Okay. So basically what we're doing is getting input and vision for what that downtown looks like over
okay.
and beyond what we currently have. We'll take that input from the public, from the council, from the planning commission. We'll create a preferred alternative is what we call it. It's mm-hmm. it's the one scenario that we all tend to like, and mm-hmm. then we'll put that out to the public and get final feedback, and then we'll implement that hopefully in the October timeframe,
mm-hmm.
and that'll be the new rules for downtown.
So that'll be a general plan amendment.
It will be. Yeah,
that's a big deal, folks. I mean, you got to think about that.
Yeah, it's called a specific plan, and basically
yes.
what that means is it's a very – you look at a focused area, and you – plan for what you want in that area.
Yes.
So it's really important. Right now, our plan, we have one in place for downtown, and it allows buildings up to 10 stories. It allows certain things, but it does have limitations. It has requirements on parking that I think are outdated. It
okay.
has, it doesn't allow for things like parklets and other kind of amenities mm-hmm. that we want to see in our downtown.
Yeah.
It has a cap on height, which is fairly artificial, which doesn't equate with actual construction methods. So we want to try to break that open and look at what's possible, what can we do there. And that plan of vision, 3,400 units downtown, what we're going to be looking at is actually increasing that to 7,000 units downtown. So we want to
Whoa.
Double the number of units in our downtown core.
Okay, so I want to talk about the type of units. I think that this impacts people because it brings in the conversation of the socioeconomic class of folks that are going to be able to afford to live downtown.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there's tendency, you look at Healdsburg and Windsor, surrounding communities, examples, Rohnert Park. The focus is to try and find a way that the community doesn't build to a level and a cost that is unaffordable.
Mm-hmm.
I think the use of the word affordable housing is really a big, wide category, right? Mm-hmm. There's governmental, there's local government, there's state government, and then there's socioeconomic subdivisions of that word. Does the city want to see multifamily with individual units being rented, or do they want to see more of a condo-wise planned unit development type projects? What is the city's goal with the 7,000 plus units?
Yes. Yeah, I think
so. You want to let the free market sort of drive it to a certain extent.
Well, I think there's a mix. There's a letting the free market, but it's also, I think we have to be very intentional when we start talking about affordable housing and how do we build inclusion into our community. So we can't just let that happen by chance. And I think we've tended to do that over time, but we're at the point now where it's got to be a very intentional approach to bringing inclusionary, incorporating affordability into market rate projects. And that's, you know, we can give incentives to do that. So there's a couple ways we can do it. We can say, hey, if you do add affordability to your project, we're going to do a lot of things for you. We're going to reduce fees. We're going to allow, you know, fast track you.
You're going to support the idea of making it affordable.
Right.
Because the builders have to have their margin of profit. Right. Otherwise, they're not going to build.
Exactly. So there's options. The developer does have an option to do fully market rate or add affordability. We want to tip the scales to try to make it worth their while to bring affordability as part of their projects. The other thing we have that we have control over is city property. So we have a lot of parking lots and parking garages downtown, and so we're looking at those because we know we as a city have control over that piece of property.
Mm-hmm.
So if a developer wants to develop on it and put housing on it, which we want, we can offer our land up, but require that they put affordable housing on
it. So does that become a co-op where you retain some sort of ownership at a city level, or do you put it on the market for the high, you know, not the highest bidder, but the best project?
Yes. I think there's a couple different options. I think we could do a land lease, long-term land lease on that property. We could sell the property with a development agreement process.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're actually working on a couple of our parking lots right now to evaluate which is the best approach. What do we want to see on that property? And is there a developer out there that is willing to put market rate affordability to our levels and bring something that the city really needs? So we have more control over our city property.
Yes.
But on the private side, what we can do is say, here's what we want to see.
Sure,
here's
you can streamline things too.
And here's the incentive.
You know, I think folks that are worried about rent control, this is the solution to rent control, free market. If our city, which it sounds like is really going gung-ho, allows the introduction of another 7,000 plus units within that urban boundary, that supply and demand shift will bring down rents. You know, it's there's always this topic about whether or not rent is affordable in Sonoma County. The fire certainly skewed that. We're going to start to see rents go down just because of the 2-year mark coming up here, 2-year anniversary of October, and insurance money running out. But this is me on my sort of pulpit saying, hey, I can't get behind rent control when I know that the free market's working with the city can provide for a reduced rental environment. Mm-hmm. Do you have any opinions on that?
I'm not going to get into the rent control debate, but I think it's an interesting point you're bringing up in terms of rents. There's two sides to that. There's the need to be intentional about having products that are at an affordable rate for people to live in our community at all levels.
Mm-hmm.
That's something that we have to be aware of and make strides toward. There's the flip side of that developers are looking at, I need high enough rents to make this
viable.
Possible. Yeah, because what's happening is the labor and the wood and the concrete and the nails and all that stuff is the same cost as it is here as it is in San Jose, for example.
But I would say it's a little higher here right now.
Well, but
simply because of the rebuild.
In general, I think because especially when you start going up, you get into a different type
of
materials than the typical single family home. So what you're seeing happen in San Jose, the materials and the labor are fairly similar.
Mm-hmm.
What's different is the rent. Right, so your rents are much higher down in San Jose, so that makes it more viable a product.
Sure,
we're on that very thin razor line right here in terms of actually making a project go or not go.
Wow, yeah.
And that's where every little tweak we do to modify a fee, defer a fee maybe for 3 months, all these little things that we're looking at and policy wise is trying to help tip that scale over that razor thin line so we can start to see production happen. And I firmly believe once we see production start happening, our units being built, showing that it's viable and getting comps, we're going to see that take off. We need to get one or two going. I think right now the biggest problem is, look downtown, you don't have a 10, 12 story, 7 story even comp.
No.
So what happens is a bank looks at this downtown area and says, well, a three-story apartment over by Coddingtown, the latest one that was built, Annandale Apartments, which are really nice. Those, that's the rent you're going to get downtown. I think that's a different type of product. So
it is.
So we're in a very strange situation of not having the comp that the banks need.
Financing these projects is very, very difficult. Yeah. There's no doubt about it. And most of these people are having to put together their own financial capital group in order to finance these projects. I want to talk last couple minutes here about emergency preparation, awareness. What the setting this up, there's been several earthquakes, thousands and thousands of earthquakes, aftershocks have happened now in Southern California, and it's caused for people to be concerned about our local preparation. What do you have to say about that? What's the city learned from the fires that would apply to modern earthquake safety and preparation?
Yeah, I think you hit it on the head. I think we learned a lot from the fires, and I think we've been training for years to respond to earthquakes. That's something that our emergency operations center is trained for. We run scenarios on earthquakes. We typically never ran one for an urban fire such that we saw happen in Santa Rosa. So I think we've learned a lot from the fires. Everything that we look at, every project we look at, every policy we look at, we're looking at from a resilience standpoint. Mm-hmm. How do we get the community back up and running? How do we bridge that gap between an eruption and service and getting people back into service?
And communications, it's important that those are updated over time. I mean, a decade ago, no one carried an iPhone.
Exactly.
Now today, everyone don't have landlines,
it's
right?
Critical. It's critical.
It's critical. Yeah, so have you worked with cellular providers to make sure that those systems are back up quickly?
Yeah, the county and the city are working really closely together. I think it is a region are looking at communication methods in terms of alarms, in terms of cell and mobile communications. It's a big, big topic.
It's a huge topic we won't cover in the last 20 seconds. The good news is you're hyper aware of these things.
Yeah, it's definitely on the top of mind of many people.
I commend what you're doing. Yeah. Mr. David Guin, the Assistant City Manager of Santa Rosa. Folks, I got to go, but if you want to check out this show again or tell your friends about it, go to ksro.com. We'll have the show podcasted there. We'll be back next Wednesday. I'm George Adair. Thanks again to David for joining us.
Great, thank you.
All right, folks. See ya.